Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Jennifer, welcome to the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm very excited to be here. It's sort of overwhelming to finally talk to you after I have you in my ear for so many years now. It's very exciting to be able to talk to you in person.
So how did I first get in your ears? How did you find Organize 365?
So I first found you, I am an avid podcast listener like you are, and had somehow stumbled across a podcast called The Productive Woman by Laura McClellan. You were one of her guests. And so that was, I think, back in early 2017.
Long time ago. Yeah, Lauren has a great podcast. I've been on a lot of podcasts. I love it. It's so funny because when you find a podcast that you like, you go all the way back. It's not like you're going back 5-7 years in time. You feel like you just like it and you find a good book. Like it doesn't matter when it was published. It's whenever you find it. So yeah, Laura, I think I've been on there a couple of times. She's a great interviewer and has a great podcast. So that's awesome. Tell us about you so that we know what your point of view is as you're answering these questions. Who lives with you in your house and where do you live?
Okay, so I live in a smaller town in the western part of Virginia, a town called Harrisonburg. I grew up here, so I still continue to live in the place where I have been all my life. I live with my husband of many years now. We were high school sweethearts, and we have three children. So we have a son who is mostly moved out of the house, our oldest son, our next son is getting ready to move to start college. And then our daughter is just now starting high school. She's a rising freshman. And then we also have a couple of fur babies. We have two dogs and one cat. Until recently, we had two cats. Sadly, now we have one cat, but we have plenty of activity going on in our household.
Wow. Okay. So soon to be high schooler, and then a couple in college are already out. Have you been working outside of the home as the kids have been young also?
Yeah. So in addition to my role at home, which I think of as my second shift, my day job, I am out of the house full time, as is my husband. We're both in the workplace outside of the home. And so I have always, since even before my children were born, been a full-time attorney in my case. I do estate planning and tax work. I'm a partner in a smaller law firm. We have about 20 some attorneys. And so that's sort of been my life. So I've always had a full-time career in addition to the work I've been doing at home.
How did you get attracted to the law? Like I want to get a cognitive PhD in psychology. I also want to get a law degree. I'd like to just be a professional student.
Yeah, I know. I'm the same as you. My dream would be to just be able to stay in school full-time, but without having to take the exams, only doing the learning.
Exactly.
Part.
Auditing all the way, making friends, learning the things. That's what I want to do.
But it was hard. I mean, I have a lot of different interests. And so, I don't know, what is that saying? Jack of all trades, master of none. But I was good at a couple of different things. I was sort of drawn to sciences. I was sort of drawn to numbers. I was sort of drawn to writing, although writing is probably my strongest area. So, but it's funny, in high school, as we were trying to think about, okay, well, what career? I thought, I'd like to be a judge. I didn't have anybody in my family that was in the law, just some distant relatives. But I thought, oh, I'd like to be a judge. Well, I didn't even know enough at that time to realize that you had to be a lawyer before you could become a judge. So that sort of got me down the path of law. And just as I realized that it sort of would combine my skills of loving to research and loving to write and talking with people. And there are so many different subject areas where you can take the law.
Right.
You can be a trial lawyer. You can be what I am, which is more of like a paper pusher type lawyer. You can work with family. You could be, trial lawyers are more are in more conflict. As a estate planning lawyer, I tend to be more collaborative, and that's the kind of position I like to be in. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was drawn to all of those things as I was going through undergraduate. I got my degree in English, but I also had a strong interest in accounting because I'm both word or interested and interested in numbers. And so tax law and estate planning just ended up being a perfect fit for me. So everybody who comes into law comes in a different way. Some people like to perform, they become the trial lawyers. Some people like to fight, they become the trial lawyers. So people come at it from different places. but it is a wonderful way to understand how business works, how government works. I mean, it really is an education in how a lot of aspects of society work.
Well, contracts in general, like just contracts are, I have gotten a real world education in contracts. Let's just say that. Literally every contract in Organize 365 has been rewritten in the last 6 months. It's been lots of fun. Lots of fun.
Yeah. And so much
of my sarcasm.
But I know. But it is interesting with contracts. So much of it is really about, okay, what are people's expectations and how do we document that? And that's kind of what I do with estate planning too. Like, what are your hopes as the person who's creating your will and your documents? What are your hopes and your thoughts about how you want things? And what, you know, you're creating the expectations that your family will have about how that's going to play out. So it's getting that pen to paper.
I know you can't give legal advice on a podcast. And I've now realized that basically when a lawyer talks, they feel like they're giving legal advice. I'm like, no, I just want you to answer a question. They're like, no, I can't answer that question. I'm like, okay. So if you can't answer my questions, it's because I don't understand the law. But so when I did our estate documents, we redid them 2 years ago. We created a trust and we just hadn't updated everything since our kids are both adults now. So they're no longer under the age of 18. This is before we knew that Abby was pregnant. So actually we need to go back. But in our trust documents, we actually named future children of our children inside of the documents. They just weren't named with social security numbers yet. And I took out a substantial life insurance policy on myself as the business owner so that the company could be made whole, the employees could be made whole, and my husband could be made whole if anything were to happen to me. Because so much of Organize 365 is now me being the face of the brand. Like the company would go on, but it just wouldn't be exactly the same thing right away. And so up until then, there was like no life insurance on Lisa, like, I don't know, $100,000 that should get to, but now there's a significant one. So if that were to go into this trust, then we had to spell out how this money would be dispersed to kids who were basically 20 and 21. Yes. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to spell this out. So I literally created like a story. It's like 6 or 7 pages and it's inside my trust. My lawyer's like, alrighty. I'm like, because most times when you create a trust or when you leave money to your children, it's like they either get it all in one lump sum or they get it like divided into two payments. But by the time they're a certain age, they just get it all. And I'm like, no. It's like, you know, if they choose to go back to college, here's how much money they can have for their first house. Here's how much money they can have. Every so often they get this amount of money for a new car. Like I literally spelled out, like, if Greg and I were not here and this money had to last all of Joey and Abby's lives and now Grayson's, but we didn't know about him at the time, how would I dole it out as the parents if they were not income producing on their own? And I literally spelled that out and I did not just give them all of it as like a lump sum. So I know that's unusual because at a certain point, like Greg's like, no, like at 40, you just have to give it all to them. I'm like, no, because I kind of created my own annuity. Basically, if you live, this money is going to keep going because we have the person that will run the trust is financially oriented. So they will invest the money. So it continues to grow as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that is, I mean, we see different levels of detail and how specific people get with things, which you're describing as highly specific. And I would say in your case, you're very good, Lisa, like seeing into the future better than most of us, I think, are and anticipating what all those differences might be. Typically, when we prepare documents, we do them to allow for some level of flexibility because it's hard to know today what might happen tomorrow. But again, you're very good at that. And so sometimes that's captured in the trust itself to make it binding. And, you know, you're in Ohio, I'm in Virginia, I practice Virginia law, so I can't say for sure what Ohio law provides. That's, you know, typical lawyer answer.
Half of Jennifer's answers are going to be like, well, it depends. I couldn't really say, but if it is, I love talking to lawyers. That's I'm like, you're really charging me by the minute for this, right? To tell me that you can't give me an answer.
Yeah, but I do think. But sometimes people leave those kinds of directions too, like their instructions to their trustee on in what we call like a family love letter that goes along with their legal documents that kind of explains, here's how I would really like you to use the money, which we can't always capture cost effectively in a legal document for you, but gives your future folks who would be managing your money for your kids an idea of, you know, here's the kind of things I would like to support in my child's life. So.
Yes. And I think because I went to so many trainings when my kids were in high school for adults with disabilities and what supports are there in the community and how special needs trusts are created. We don't have a special needs trust, but how a special needs trust is created, and then how you actually take your income and put it in a special needs trust, and only a certain amount goes out to the child per year, so they still qualify for any social services that they would qualify for. Right. We did not need that, but we were looking at all those opportunities, and I was working with a lot of families who were taking advantage of a lot of those opportunities. And when your kids are 18, 19, 20, 21, like technically in the eyes of the law, they are an adult.
Correct.
But as a parent, you may not be like, game on,
knock
yourself out.
Yeah, no.
So often we tend to financially support our children through their 20s and sometimes into their 30s and 40s. And so when you're making your own estate choices, you need to think about what level of parenting you're at right now. Not necessarily like, it is amazing how many things happen at 18, 21, 25, like healthcare. Like if Greg and I were to pass away, where do our children get healthcare from? So there's actually a stipulation in here for how much that basically this trust will pay all healthcare expenses.
Yes.
To no limit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I totally have thought this all the way through. By the way, in case anybody's wondering, like, what book did Lisa read about this? How did Lisa figure this out? Lisa did not read a book. There is no book. Lisa just figured it out on my own. Like, I just imagined what it would be in the future, what things would arise where they would have a financial hardship that this could kick in and cover that.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
Yeah. You have great foresight.
The other thing I did as soon as they turned 18 is I just took them to our local bank. And I had printed out online just a general power of attorney. And I took it to the bank and got it notarized. So I immediately became power of attorney for my kids the day they turned 18. Because once they turn 18, you cannot do anything financially anymore unless you have a power of attorney. And it's just a general one without property or anything like that.
Yeah. And I say that you did a good thing in making sure that that was done. Of course, as a lawyer, I sometimes say, oh, sometimes those online forms are great and sometimes they're not so great. I'm sure the one that you have is great.
Well, Joey has a condo now, so it's not great.
Yeah.
And so the owner of the condo, but he's not. So it's fine.
But in general, yeah, I mean, that is an area that people often overlook with their young adult children is as soon as they're 18, technically in the eyes of the law, they're adults, even mm-hmm. though you and I and everybody else knows that in many cases, they still need some baking off to do.
Baking off.
So that power of attorney is a very powerful document that if they did have a disability or that developed, you know, if they were in a car accident or whatever,
right,
legally you wouldn't be able to help them. So it's a little bit of advanced planning that can really help if there was an emergency.
And being listed as being allowed to be on their medical records at each doctor and each hospital and each pharmacy, like every single one, you have to have them sign off that you can do
correct.
This. If you're refilling their prescriptions, they will get kicked out of your automatic app at the age of 18 and into their own app, which is ridiculous because then they don't go into their email and they never know. And you're paying the bill anyway, but you can't get to it.
Anyways. Are you living my life, Lisa? That's how it sounds like.
it's not that the parenting goes away. It just gets more hoops you have to jump through. You know, if your children need that level of support, let's be honest, what 19-year-old really wants to be in charge of all of their healthcare?
Yeah, many do. And that's why the products that you have for young adults are really helpful, both to the parents and to the kids, you know, to get them started in the right direction. Because I do think a lot, the world is more complex than it used to be. It is more complex than when you and I were going through. Because there were some things I'm like, wow, I was taking care of that at a much younger age. But it's just not the same. There's a lot. For kids to
and the digital does not make it easier for me. Like once it's set up and it's working, it makes it easier for me, but to get it working does not make it easier for me.
It's a lot more hidden with digital. And I'm very much a digital hybrid girl. Like I'm digital and paper, but you're absolutely right. There are parts of it. And in estate administration, we're talking about young adults. On the flip side, everything we're talking about, in some ways, I say, if you have aging parents,
yes,
thinking about a lot of these same things.
Totally. This is why I don't like paperless billing. I do not like paperless billing.
Yeah.
I have opted into it for almost everything, but I don't like paperless billing because there's no reminder there. And if somehow something gets unconnected or whatever, you don't have any paper trail. Like I do not have paperless billing. So I literally don't even open them. I see my mortgage come through. I see our car payments come through. I get them out of the mail. I rip them, shred them. I don't even open them. But it's a reminder, did I see that? Then go through on my checking account. Yes, everything is running just fine. And what I found, and you tell me if this is true for you, but what I found with my own father and with many of the professional organization clients I worked with estates, is that there comes a point at the end of their lives where they literally stop opening mail. And it's usually months and months and months, sometimes years before they pass away. And what I found to be true in every instance that that happened, where they stopped opening mail, it is because they either ran out of money or they can't keep track of their money anymore. And so they just pretend that this is not happening to them. And then when you finally get all of that mail open, a lot of these accounts are delinquent, or they've double paid on some and not on others, and they get very confused. And so they're just piles and piles and piles of mail that need to be opened and gone through and contacted. And it took me, for my father, who was sick for the year before he passed away, it took me a solid 3 months to even find all of the accounts that need to be reconciled.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think too, they can just get overwhelmed. And that's partly why they stop opening it. And then also, they grew up in a paper-based world, so they always kept everything. So while that doesn't answer the opening part of this, it's just, you know, the envelopes start stacking up on the huge stack of paper that they already have. So, but you know, what's funny about that is, on the flip side, if you're trying to administer an estate, it can be helpful to have some of that paper there.
That's way helpful.
A world where you can't even see it and you don't know how to get to it.
Yes.
And you don't know what you don't know. You know, I am mostly paperless, and but for having your products and, you know, I haven't gotten there yet, but trying to fill out that financial binder, it would be very hard for somebody to come into my household, because I've listened to you so well and gotten rid of a lot of things, you know, but for that binder, they wouldn't really be able to start digging in my files to figure out what I had. Whereas with my parents, they kept everything going back 50 years, you know.
Yeah.
I have their original everything.
Yes. Okay, so some, before, we still haven't even gotten into your interview yet. I haven't even asked you any of the questions you already asked. We're just totally going on your expertise right now. That I learned, this was from a book, when my father was sick, knowing that he was going to inevitably pass away sooner rather than later, I started reading about settling an estate, and I learned, and I've said this many times, I learned that we could take the home that he owned and the cars that he owned. And we had a very liberal power of attorney. We could buy and sell. We had like the most liberal, apparently there are levels. We had the highest level.
Good.
We could have done business transactions for his business, everything. So we went down, my sister and I went down to the title agency, and we were able to change the title of our family home and the car that he owned into transfer on death to Emily's and my name, which meant that he still retained the ownership of the house and the car while he was alive. But the second he passed away, all of a sudden that property immediately transferred to my sister and I. And in the state of Ohio, that then bypasses probate, meaning that immediately we owned the house. It did not have to go through all of that. Are there any other resources you can point us to, or books to read, for things like that? I mean, like, that's significant. I know that there was a local farm here that did not have their will set up correctly, and they just sell all of their land just to be able to save the house at the end. And they owned like so much land. It's because their will was not set up correctly, and everything went through probate.
Yeah.
What is probate?
That is really sad. Oh gosh. Well, how do I unpack that? So what you did with the house?
Kindergarten level. What is probate?
Which question do I answer first? What you said there about the house and the car, that's great. Yeah, transfer on death designations, beneficiary designations on retirement accounts, life insurance policies, accounts where you can do that sort of thing can be really great. And it does. It's a way to avoid probate without a complex trust. And then in terms of what is probate, probate is the process of, you know, if you have property that's passing under your will, needs to pass under your will, you have property that's in your individual name, has no beneficiary designation on it, no transfer on death designation on it, it needs to pass under your will, or else it's going to pass however the state says it passes under the laws of your state's laws of what we call intestacy. That's somebody who dies without a will, you die intestate. But probate is the process if you either die without a will or with a will, and you have any property that needs to pass under the will or doesn't have those beneficiary designations on it, of the court supervision of the estate administration process. So that in a nutshell is what probate is. And you can avoid it either by having things titled and in the name of a trust, which is what people used to have done a lot historically. And there may be other reasons why you want to do a trust, like what you're doing, Lisa, where you have a lot of management that you want to have of your money after your children. Because if you just leave it to them outright on a, you know, if you leave a life insurance policy and just name them directly on it, you have no control. It goes into their personal name once you pass away. Mm-hmm. But if you've left it to your trust, then your trust can say, oh, I want it distributed here, there, you know, what are the terms you want it distributed under? But the real estate thing is a great tool, and it's nice. Ohio has that. Virginia has that. A lot of states have that. Not all states historically have had that transfer on death for real estate. It historically has been treated differently from accounts. But the only thing to keep in mind with some of those beneficiary designations is it does bypass your will. So if you have particular ideas on how you want things divided up, you better make sure that's captured on that beneficiary designation. We saw that a lot with joint accounts. You know, an elderly parent will set up a joint account with one sibling. And the idea is, oh, you'll be sharing this with all your siblings. But legally, if it's just the one sibling name, they're going to be the surviving owner. And it's their choice whether they share it with the rest of the siblings or not. So yes, it's a great tool to simplify and streamline administration, but make sure you understand what you're doing. And so in terms of resources, yes, there are a lot of great books that you could find on Amazon and so forth. But I always say, you know, kind of start local as you can and find some great, you know, do your own research, Googling lawyers, you know, blogs and things like that. But if you can start cultivating a financial team for yourself, you know, and a strong accountant that you like, a strong insurance professional that you like, and a strong legal counsel that you like, and a financial advisor, those four legs of the stool. Yep. That's what, because I think you're going to get the benefit of their expertise across so many estates and plans and family situations that they've dealt with.
And when you say that, all I think is dollar, dollar, dollars.
I know, so it is money. A lot of dollars.
So I would say, go ahead. You can also use books and podcasts. So if you, like, if Jennifer had a podcast, then you could use Jennifer as your virtual estate attorney, even though you are not contractually working with her, because you would get the benefit of the information. So you can use books and podcasts to increase your knowledge so you know how to use those legal resources with less billable hours. You can go to seminars. Like, there's so many free and low paid seminars that you can go to, but don't ignore it, because
And the more you do to educate yourself, the better client you'll be if you end up. And I always tell people to keep in mind, and it's sort of what you do, Lisa, too. Keep in mind, you know, your estate, I don't know what your estate is. It may be $10,000, it may be $100,000, it may be $1 million, it may be a couple million. Whatever you pay those financial professionals, usually, especially if you're talking like $100,000 or couple $100,000 estate, which by the time you put in retirement accounts and life insurance.
A house.
A lot of folks get there pretty easily. Mm-hmm. You know, what you're going to be paying, the, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 that you invest up front with some good estate planning advice and financial advice. I mean, because it doesn't even cost, a basic estate plan does not cost me $5,000 to put into place for something.
No, I think mine was like $1,200.
Yes, that would be a very typical range. I would say, you know, depending on where, if you're in a bigger city, maybe not, but in in a lot of areas of the country, it's probably going to cost you $600 to $2,000 to put in.
Our first one was $600. We had a living will, power of attorney, power of healthcare, all that. Mm-hmm. This third time we did it, it was $1,200 because we added a trust in there. Again, I went prepared. I'd done a lot of research prepared, so I didn't take a lot of time in just talking or having them do the work. I'd already done all of my research in advance, but well worth it for the peace of mind of knowing all that's done. Okay, yes. One more surprise that I had when I did my dad's estate was I did not realize you had to have an inventory. That's why we have it in the back of that financial binder, which seems ridiculous, but you really do. It's like 3 couches and 4 TVs. I'm like, do I really need to do this? They're like, yes, it has to go to the court. I'm like, unbelievable. you don't have to put like how many shoes or whatever, but you really have to, like, you have to make an inventory.
You do. And I mean, that's just a good idea anyway, especially if you're serving in the family, you know, if you have siblings or other family members that you're answering to have a sense of that.
Yes.
Virginia might be a little different from Ohio. We can lump a little more of that stuff together, but it's still a good idea. And you're absolutely right. You do need to have that basic inventory. You have to have a rough idea of the value of those household contents.
It's the value of it. Yeah. Yes. They want to know the value of it. I'm like, well, no one's going to pay anything for this, but you know, the sentimental value. So, oh my gosh, settling an estate is an experience almost everyone's going to have.
Yes.
And you learn a lot.
Yeah.
So anyways, thank you for the long rabbit trail. But I think that we don't often have the opportunity to talk to someone who's on the legal side of an estate. And we do have a lot of questions, and you're very nervous because you're dealing with, you know, your lost family members' finances and their legacy and how that's going to be distributed to the people who are left behind and the emotions of the people who are left behind who are processing this in a different pace, and the funeral that has to be planned, and sometimes the house that needs to be sold, and like, it all happens very quickly, and the rest of your life doesn't stop, and it is a big deal.
It's
a big deal.
It is. That's fraught with the emotional baggage. And yeah, and what I offer from a legal standpoint is one piece of it. And then what you offer through Organize 365 is sort of the other piece of it, in terms of how you process the practical aspects of what I, you know, my legal documents are only going to go so far and how detailed they are. And the law doesn't go into some of those things that you're dealing with as a practical matter on what can really help people move forward. So together, they really give a holistic approach to what needs to happen.
So Jennifer, why did you start listening to Organize 365?
You know, I've always been sort of an organization nerd and that it's just always fascinated me. So even back in the day, you know, anytime Oprah had, you know, organization stuff, Julie Morgan Stern, you know, I had her books, Organizing from the Inside Out.
I love those.
And then, you know, anything Martha Stewart would do or Real Simple, like I love looking, because I like pretty things too. So like love, and I'm a very into like, oh, what system can, you know, I'm kind of a perfectionist. I'm like, what system can make things run better and be pretty and make things work better? So I was always sort of oriented that way. And I've always sort of been like, you know, people pleaser, like I've just always wanted to do well and try to do things well. So, you know, that sort of got me onto the whole organization thing, which I'd always been on all my life. But, you know, as life became more complicated and having more responsibilities beyond myself, that got harder and more overwhelming, you know, as children came into the picture and work and trying to balance home life. And so when I found Laura, again, I like listening to folks who are able to combine, you know, whatever their life passion is with, you know, their personal life passion is with other responsibilities to other folks, their, you know, their caregiving responsibilities. And that's what I was struggling with more. And when I stumbled across you, saw that and got really interested in your messages. So went back and listened to your original podcasts. And then I think I did. So like a month or two after that was you were still offering the Sunday basket workshops that you led. So I actually had one with you.
Wow.
March of 2017. I look back because I love that in our Organize 365 accounts, we can see every order we've ever placed. So I went back and I was like, okay, March of 2017 was the first time. And it was a Sunday basket workshop with you. And I think there were maybe 7 or 8 of us on the call.
Always pays to get in early, I say.
I know, and it was great. But at that time, it was like, okay. And I mean, the Sunday basket is such a wonderful concept. At the time, I wasn't good about making it happen. But what you got me really sold on beyond the Sunday basket was the 100 days. And I was like, oh, because I love stuff. And I've always been, you know, and I like to organize, like I love to set up the dollhouse, but then I went and play with the dolls. I just wanted to get it all set up. Just
me
so,
too. Right?
That
me
was my too. Favorite part. Yeah. So the 100 day was what really got me in. But it was COVID in 2020, I think, that really got me into the rest of what you do. You know, I mean, I just sort of, everything you've offered, I've acquired because I just love you so much. Because again, no other solution that I'd worked with in the past was as detailed and covered both home and work in the way that you do. So you really offer the full package. So yeah, so the 100 day, I was going along with that and trying to do the organization with that. But it was COVID and 2020 where the wheels really started to come off of everything. I mean, we did okay when my kids were young. It was a little harder doing the work-life balance. But we were very blessed during COVID. We did not in our family really experience COVID itself. But the fallout from COVID and during that time frame, you know, everybody had been healthy and so forth and so on. But that year, that spring, my eldest son, we finally realized, oh, he's not just an eighth grader that's not really growing up. He has ADHD, which was something we hadn't really, he was a senior in high school. So it wasn't until late in his high school career that we really realized, oh, this is something more than just, you know, a normal boy that can't, you know, because he'd gotten through school just fine. He's a bright kid.
Smart.
But it's when you're getting to those later years and there's more demands and more self discipline that you have to do around prioritizing tasks and so forth, that he started to struggle in the middle of COVID. And then my youngest daughter, in the spring of 2020, we realized after a while trying to figure out what was going on that she had a serious immune disease. She has Crohn's disease. And so she needed to start up. She had a terrible flare that was really hard going on that spring at the same time. And on top of that, I have aging parents. So we've talked about a little bit about aging parents, but all three of them, they were ill. And I say all three of them because I had grew up in a multi-generational household with my grandmother. And so at that time, my mother's dementia was getting extremely bad and she needed to be institutionalized. She was at the point where she'd lost so much motor skills. She had to be placed because my father could no longer care for her. And he was at the same time, he had his own lung condition. And then my grandmother's in her 90s had always lived with us. And she was just, you know, she was just getting older. And so she got really sick and she ended up passing. It wasn't COVID, but she just because of her age ended up passing. Between the months of March and June, we needed to basically do full-time care, sharing among the family and what we could cobble together with caregivers at home. So it worked out wonderfully that she was able to pass at home because that's what she wanted. And if she had been in a care facility, we wouldn't have been able to see her. Mm-hmm. But we were trying to juggle. I'm the youngest of four siblings, so thank goodness I had a large enough family. But we were all juggling caregiving for aging parents together with what my husband and I were dealing with at home. And it was just a lot. And so that's a very long wind up to saying, that's when I realized I need more than just having things in their place, having the Sunday basket. And I had already started to somewhat use the Sunday basket, but that's when it really shone was that I realized, oh, this is what's helping me keep my sanity in the midst of all this chaos, because we never knew what was going to happen from day to day, from morning to evening. And knowing that I had my Sunday basket there and the routines and systems, even if I wasn't doing them weekly, that I could come back to the next month. The other major things in our life weren't dropping through the cracks when we had these other big rocks we were trying to deal with. It was just a godsend and really what saved my sanity during that period.
Well, good golly, Miss Molly, that's a lot.
Yeah, sorry. I know that's a lot of sharing. I have an open book.
As we get older, it's going to be like, well, tell me about your history. Okay. You're like, do you want to know pre-COVID, during COVID, or after COVID?
Yeah. And during that period, so on the top of my grandmother passing, my dad ended up passing away the next year in the spring, and which is dementia. It's just, we all kind of like, my siblings and I, we love our parents. And my mom, while she's still with us, she has not for 5 or 6 years now had any communication. No mobility, no ability to communicate, no ability to recognize us, although we hope she does when we visit her. You know, you can squeeze her hand and that's about it. It's just such a hard disease. So we feel like we've lost them all, but we also feel so blessed that, you know, we had things in place and we have a close family and we have systems like you helped us put in place to cope with these things. But it was a lot. The past couple of years have been a lot and a lot of transition and missed them terribly. I don't like being the grown up in the room now. I miss it.
I know. When did that happen?
And I like parts of it. I like parts of being the grown up.
I thought it would be fun.
But I still want them. And I want them in the room too, because they were just such blessings in our lives while we had them.
Well, and I mean, I know when my grandfather was like 102, when he actually needed to go into the memory care, which is where in Ohio, we go into memory care when you have Alzheimer's and you need basically full-time care. And I believe my grandmother said it was $10,000 a month to give him that care that he needed. And they had the resources to pay for that. I know that Greg's mom has a long-term care policy, like a life insurance policy, a long-term care policy that would cover that if she were to need that. So if you are unaware, it is extremely expensive. College times 10, expensive, the older that you get and the care that you need. And yeah, you need to have a long-term care plan for that.
Yeah, and start looking. I think the general, I am not a financial advisor in that area, but I think the general recommendation is in your 50s.
I always heard 55, like you get it by the time. Because you need to get it when you're healthy and pay in so that it's okay. And I plan to be 100. So, you know. I need to add that in.
I mean, I don't know that it helps people feel that reassured, but most folks don't need long-term care for such an extended period of time. So, you know, it's not usually the period of time, like, for example, that my mother has needed, but you don't know for sure.
You don't.
And so, and it is an expense. And so, we're fortunate that our parents were in it. I know it's not what my mom wanted to do with her, her money, but I'm glad that she's well cared for and that we have the resources, because we would be, with her condition, we would be incapable of caring for her at home and could not find people to care for her at home full time at the level of care that she needs. She needs full care. Yeah.
So all the lawyers you mentioned earlier, I have all those plus a tax attorney. And then I also have all the insurances. Like I keep calling my insurance guy. I'm like, what do you still have that I haven't bought? He's like, oh, X, Y, Z. I'm like, darn it. I need all those too.
Yeah.
All the insurances. Like there are so many insurance bills I pay every month. They're worth it. Like that's what they're for. But yes, insurance.
Yeah, think about insurance. And also, like I said, though, you know, for the typical span that a lot of people would spend in long-term care, this is why having a financial advisor in your picture, too, in addition to your insurance agent and talking to each other, you may have enough resources. I mean, your kids may not get the inheritance that they would like to have, but they've raised you. Like, in my view, is like, my parents raised me and they got me educated, and that's all I could ask. I mean, that was more than I could have asked of them. Thank you. And so if there was an inheritance, that would be lovely. But I want my parents taken care of. And so, and a lot of folks will have the means to do that, but it is very hard. It is very expensive. It's the aging population, it's a whole thing. Caregiving in our society is a whole thing.
It really is. I mean, the older you get, the more you think, this isn't what I thought it would be, but also you have the knowledge and the resources and the people your age are going through it as well, that you can talk to and like kind of go through these stages of life together.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. We're in the throes. I guess out of your stages, I would say we're in the throes of survival, but heading very quickly to the downsizing phase.
Yeah.
Which I'm looking forward to, but it's bittersweet. It's hard to let go.
I did say to Greg the other day, you know, as our daughter and granddaughter, grandson live with us. And I said, this is not what I thought empty nesting would be, but then they both had friends over for the 4th of July, you know, of the opposite sex. And so we had like these six adults plus Greg's mom came over plus the baby, and we were making pina coladas and beers and all this stuff. It was so fun. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, this is what, like 10 years from now, like I was like, oh, we downsized all this stuff. I'm no, you need more China, more stuff, because when everybody comes together, okay, you know, the celebratory stuff. And I'd always said that in my books, like in the downsizing and legacy phases, you don't need things on a day-to-day basis. Like Greg and I don't even eat dinner anymore. First of all, we gain weight by eating breakfast and lunch. I don't even know how that's possible, but we're just not hungry at night. So we're not doing the dinners that we used to do, but the holidays are getting bigger and bigger and bigger each time. And we host all of those. All of the things that go along with that. So you do actually downsize your daily needs. Yeah. And like, we can go through the whole week and just like, you know, throw in a couple loads of laundry. That's all the housework that we're doing. Yeah. But when it comes to the holidays, it's like the Griswolds. We're doing like the full family Christmas vacation experience. And you need all the stuff that goes along with that.
That's fun and kind of exciting to hear. Cause actually part of my sadness has been, we did a lot of entertaining when the kids were young. And we have less capacity to entertain now. And so I've been, but I have a hard time letting go of that entertaining stuff. I think I've still done the right thing. I think what I'm excited about though, is you've given me permission, like, oh, that might come back around. And now I can look forward to maybe getting new stuff.
I think it comes back around like 3 to 5 years. Like at first you go to college, you go whatever, like, they're like, I'm on my own. Like Joey's like, I'm not coming over for Sunday dinner. I'm like, okay, but we're having filet. And you can't afford McDonald's. So you really might want to come over when your dad's going to grill some steak. So now he's starting to realize, oh, she wasn't kidding about it. They're serving steak. Yeah. So he's coming back around. We've been buying over the last couple of years, a lot of appetizer things, like little boards to make cheese trays on and stuff to carry stuff out to the deck and different kind of drink glasses, stuff like that, little appetizer plates. And then I could see soon that the holidays actually will be at our house and they will be big. And then the next thing that I want to do, which COVID killed our budget for a while, but what I'd like to do is establish a family vacation that we pay for, because we've always gone on a family vacation for Greg's family has always done that. Like we pay our own way, but the whole family's there. It's really fun. I would like to do one for our family. I'd like to do something like in the Caribbean where we go down and just spend a week. And so that's what I'm looking for. And that'll be like a 20-year experience. So I don't think we've done it as often, but
those memories and shared experiences are invaluable. I mean, that's one of them. I'm so glad with my dad before he passed that we took this very special trip together with him to Hawaii, which was a special place in his life. And it was, I just can't even say how grateful I am. We were able to do that. It was the last big trip he was able to do before he got really sick. And so just priceless.
Yeah, it's different. Like the day-to-day, there's a lot less to do. But at the holidays, there seems to be a lot more to do, but you want to because you're like, yes, this is like my time and I get to put all of my effort into this. So
yeah,
I can't wait to see how it turns out for you. But that's kind of how it's turning out for us.
That's great.
So what do you think you have more of now that you've been on this organizing journey?
You know, all the answers that people have always given you and in terms of, you know, more time. But for me, it's not so much that I have more time because my problem is I have so many different interests. I always want to fill it. Like I like to work out. So I have workout times. I like to cook. So I have cookie times. And so for me, it's like, how do I pack this all into? But what your systems have done is help me to prioritize, which is something that I really struggle with, to say, okay, these are the things that I really want to get done. So if I had to pick a word that I would say I have more of, it's serenity. In the midst of all of that, because while I still pack my days full, I feel like I'm being more intentional. So it's more of a qualitative feel to my time than quantitative. And I am not saying I'm perfect because I am not there yet. And we didn't talk, you know, I do want to mention the workbox in your practice. Okay. I got stuck on the workbox because I wasn't sure how to make it apply to my practice. Mm-hmm. And I struggle with that. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention how beneficial it has been to work with. And it sort of goes into what we were talking about, trying to find professionals, if you can afford them, professionals to work with on your estate planning. You know, while I loved your podcast and I absorbed so much in your book, you know, books and everything, when I got stuck, being able to work with one of your certified professional organizers, in my case, that's Stephanie at Island Organizing, just like 10 thumbs up for Stephanie, except she's my secret.
But I think the secret's out on that one, Jeff.
I know. But being able to work with somebody that, like, you felt, and Stephanie's great for me because she has experience in law offices, yep. Medical, and, you know, and you have a lot of different organizers that, you know, match up with different people too. So it's just like a lawyer or any professional finding your right fit. But she would help me get unstuck on that. And being able to do that one-on-one coaching and brainstorming. And then also the facilitation that she does and that you, I think your other professional organizers do, of like small groups. Like, while I love the app, is wonderful to have community there. But we, you know, with Stephanie, we sort of also developed a small community within a community. And yep. Being able to, you know, meet every couple weeks with the same group of ladies that are going through similar things and bouncing ideas off of each other, help for accountability, help me just, you know, move forward and get new ideas on how to use things. So I think that's a very important component of what you offer.
I love that. Back when you found the Sunday basket, back when you just got Slash Pockets shipped to you, there was no box. I hadn't even designed the box yet.
I loved it, but I had that.
I already had the certification program because I knew that the products are important. Like, the box does help you, the $97 box or the $250 box. They really do help you, but it's about the people. Like, learning a skill is not just about knowledge. Like, we're not in the knowledge economy anymore. You can find knowledge anywhere. It's implementation and having people and processes and systems that support the way you like to learn so that you can implement, so that you can get the transformation. The knowledge itself is not very valuable. It's the transformation you can achieve by implementing the idea.
Yes. Yes.
And the certified organizers are awesome. Like, they're you. They're like the Organize 365 community. They're like, okay, I'll take some time and I'll help someone else. And the small groups and the one-on-one, I mean, and it's not cost prohibitive. I mean, it's not no money, but it's not like you're going to a lawyer, Jennifer. I mean, it's not a legal bill or a CPA bill or whatever. I mean, it's like, you know, a workshop.
Right. Yeah. And everybody's budget is different, but it is, again, you know, for the peace of mind, the serenity, the extra time, whatever it is that it gives you, I have found that to be a very helpful component. And I didn't do it initially, but since I've been doing it really over the past year or so, it's really taken things to the next level.
So you do that about every 3 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks?
So we have a group that meets every 2 weeks. And then, you know, I use some of her retreats that she offers on a monthly basis from time to time. I really need to get unstuck on my binder. I'm too perfectionistic about it.
Yep,
I don't like my handwriting. I want it to be typed in. I want it to be just so. And so I'm always fiddling with it. But yeah, to make progress on things like that, because then it's scheduling the unscheduled, right? Mm-hmm. Like, things that can be done at any time get done at no time. Is that what
exactly.
they say? And so when I have that, if I put that paper retreat or whatever on my calendar every few months, like I'm not going to get it all done, but at least makes progress on it. Because otherwise I found a million other things to fill that time slot that aren't reminders. As much as I love doing them.
Yeah. Do you do any of the planning days also or no?
Yes. Okay. I'm telling you, Lisa, I have the full, you got me. I've drunk the Kool-Aid.
Good to hear. So are you doing both for home and work or just work?
Yes, I am doing both for home and work. And I'm still working on the work system and trying to figure out how it best incorporates, because I have pretty robust systems already at work, you know, in terms of how I use like Outlook and my electronic tools. But I do it all because it is helpful to plan. I don't make time for planning. I love to research and I'm pretty good at executing, but the planning and stepping back and looking at the big picture, and that's what your planning days force us to do. So
this podcast will probably come out after the new Workbox planner has launched. As we're recording it, I'm meeting with the graphic designer after this call to finish up the new business Workbox planner. The current business Workbox planner we've had up until this date is fine, but the new one has a lot of the things I verbally talked through in planning day in picture form. Like she was really able to take some of the concepts that I teach and create a picture in your head so you can really start to see what I was teaching. And it really takes the Workbox planner to the Productive Home Solution Planner level as far as seeing your time and understanding what the slash pockets are for and how projects move from pink to purple to blue to green. And how do you pick out, like, so we used to only have like one purple plan. Now we have five. So you can actually plan out your 3 to 5 right inside of your planner. Mm-hmm. I've given up on the date book. There is a date book in the back, but I'm just not a date book person. I'm a planning person. You can use whatever date book or planner you want, but it's the act of taking that one day to plan your next 90 days in work or your 120 days at home. It really does start to create a compound effect on how you make decisions, how you prioritize things, what you understand that you can accomplish in that amount of time. After a couple of planning days, you start to realize, oh, I really can only get like 3 goals accomplished in work in the next 90 days. And at first you go, this is ridiculous. I have 8 things I have to get accomplished. But once you resign yourself to the fact like, okay, that's great that I have to, but I'm only going to get 3. Then if I'm only going to get 3, what are the 3? Usually you'll get 4 or 5 done, but it forces you to limit what you're going to do in that time frame, which actually creates more momentum and opportunities going forward. But until you start experiencing it and get through a full year that way, it's so hard to understand that truly slowing down to speed up.
Yes. And I'm also super excited about what you're doing on the Productive Home Solution side with the new structure. I'm really like, am I really doing the 100 days? I don't think I'm doing the 100 days this summer because while I always want to, I just don't have this mentality. Yeah. But I'm really excited about the news. So I'm actually really tracking along with you on your store. Like for me, it's storage. And yes. I love that concept. And that's what I know in the past, I've heard you say things like, oh, they're thought leaders that I follow for a while. And then I sort of get, but with you, you're always evolving. You're always like rethinking. And that's what I like to like, what is it? Continuous improvement or whatever.
Oh.
Like, you're always doing that. And so for me, I'm always finding new things in what you're doing and new ways of thinking about what it is. And it's just honing.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited about that new approach because I think it'll be very effective. And I love it, but you're also so good too, but you're still offering the old approach, which is also neat in its own way. But I'm very excited about the new structure too.
Yeah. I think it is the missing piece as to how we've taught organization to homeowners in the past. Most of the leaders in the home organization industry were one of two kinds of people. They were stay-at-home moms that figured out how to get organized because they had so much going on that they needed to master, or they were interior decorators that want you to get your house clean enough so they can decorate it for you. And it's those two things. And so in both cases, stay-at-home mom or an interior decorator, they're looking at the entire house and getting the entire house finished. But when you look at the general population that needs to get organized, they may not have the money and the time to get the whole house organized to that Pinterest level. And they may not have the time in the home that a stay-at-home mom has. And I was a stay-at-home mom. I'm understanding that, you know, there's a lot of things you're doing at home, but also I got a lot of stuff done because I was at home. So if the kids were down for a nap, I had a 2-hour pocket of time. I wasn't driving somewhere. Like when my kids were under the age of 5, I was at home so much. I was able to get a lot of projects done just because I was physically at home with them, even if I was earning other income. But the majority of people who want to organize their house, it's really 20 to 40% of their house that bothers them, not all of it. And they have a moderate amount of time and a moderate amount of months or a year to put towards this project. This is not their new hobby that they want to do for the rest of their lives. So if there's a way to get most of this all the way done in 12 months and then maybe put another 6 months in and you could call it all done, they'll sign up for that program. But if this is a never-ending hobby that we're all going to do it until we get to a perfectionistic standard, then you're only going to get 5% of America. And I really want to get 95% of America to an organized level. So how do we do that?
Yeah. And that new approach, I do. I love the way, and I think the way that you have it, it's sort of a functional approach to it now, just it helps to bring more of the men in our lives into the program.
Yes. We are having a lot more men join and a lot more men feel like, okay, this is something that I can participate in. I could see myself here.
But I love that you bring to the productivity space, which is something, you know, as a person who's always been interested in productivity, you know, you sort of have these business-oriented productivity folks that don't necessarily recognize the home obligations that people have. And again, you're a unicorn in melding those two things, because most people, or a lot of people, do have some like work or passion project obligations in addition to their home obligations. And how do you recognize and honor and not balance, or whatever the word is that we want to use, how do you meld those two to make it functional? And you just, you offer that in a way that's different.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. So what do you wish you had known sooner? Like, you jumped in 5 years ago.
I know. Again, being a perfectionist oriented person, just that, you know, the mantras about progress over perfection and the grace that you just, you have to keep reminding me. And I love that you do, and reminding all of us that, you know, it's okay. You don't have to, but just that those little steps do add up over time and make a difference. So just that progress over perfection, done is better than perfect, those kinds of things, being reminded of them. But I just wish I had taken those to heart sooner.
Being a person of excellence instead of a perfectionist.
Yes, that one too. Yes. I love it when you say
that. I think that one I came up with recently, because I would always say, you know, progress over perfection, which is true. But sometimes when you say progress over perfection, like when I was saying it, I think some people who had striven towards perfection before, and I had as well, would say, okay, well, I'm just giving up, and I'm saying I'm never going to achieve that perfect. So I guess I'll settle for progress.
Yeah.
So when instead I started saying, we're all people of excellence and we're continuing to grow and be better and more proactive every day, but we know that perfection is not a thing. It doesn't even exist in reality. So instead of saying I'm a perfectionist, say I'm a person of excellence.
Yes.
So instead of progress over perfection is true, but then if you follow that up with, I am a person of excellence, and replacing every time you want to say I'm a perfectionist, say I am a person of excellence. Just even when you say it in whatever context, like if you're in a job interview and they say, are you a perfectionist? Like, that's a classic job interview question. Are you a perfectionist? And there's two ways you're looking at that. Like, if you say yes, they're like, great, this person is going to like dot all the I's and cross all the T's. Legal people probably want you to be a perfectionist. Yeah. But in my case, as an entrepreneur, if you say you're a perfectionist, I'm like, oh, they're going to take twice as long to do this project, when really we only need to get it to this level to get it out so that we can achieve the transformation. Whereas if you went into a job interview and they said, are you a perfectionist or not? Because they're going to ask you, and you say, you know what? I realize that perfection is a thing that never happens, but I am a person of excellence. So I do something. Da, da, da. Can you see? You'll be like, hired.
Yeah.
You're hired.
Yeah.
Because that's the right answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, like, I'm even sitting up taller when I think of, yes, I'm a person of excellence. I'm putting in great effort. I'm working really hard at this. I'm taking my roles and responsibilities I have very seriously, but I'm not creating some unrealistic expectation for myself or my family that I can't attain, that I'm always like just under meeting it. Like, I am bringing my excellence to whatever I am doing. It's real empowering.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have to close out. What advice would you give to someone who is just starting out on their organization journey?
I would say two things. Number one is be patient. It's going to take time. You want it to happen instantly. We all want that instant gratification, but it will take time. I mean, it's a process of months and years. I mean, maybe if you're able to devote, you know, full time to doing nothing but getting things in shape, but it's going to take time. And it just takes a lot to absorb, and your life circumstances change. So it really is a process. So So even if you've got it mostly figured out for one stage of life, something's going to come around the corner and you're going to need to evolve. So just be patient with that and recognize that, yeah, it's going to take time, but it's good. And you are moving forward. And a lot of it is what's going on between your two ears in terms of the mindset evolution. So that's number one. And number two, like I was sharing with the workbox, if you get stuck, reach out for help. You know, go into the community app, or if you're able to work with one of the certified professional organizers, like there are so many people in the Organize 365 community that are willing to offer you. And two minds really are stronger than one. Or 10 minds, you know, I mean, so, but yeah, just reaching out for help and knowing that there are the resources out there to get you unstuck if you're struggling with how to implement a piece of the process.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And for those of you that are listening, they've been following for years as well, like Jennifer has, please don't wait 5 years to apply to be a guest on the Wednesday podcast. Like, I didn't bite, did I, Jennifer? Like, it was fun.
No. It's so hard. I think so many of us are starstruck, and I feel like you're my best friend, but you don't know who I am. And I'm like, do I really have that much that's interesting to share? I'm like, because I get so much out of what other people share, but I never feel like my story is something like, people are doing much more amazing things than I am. What does anybody have to learn from what I do? So I hope somebody's gotten a nugget out of this today, but I'm very grateful for all the past guests that you've had.
Oh my goodness. So many nuggets, just even on the estate planning alone, the first half of this podcast is so, so, so valuable for everyone. So Jennifer and I are inviting you to apply, and apply means you basically just answer the questions first, so you have time to think about it. Cause you can see how I'm going to take you on a rabbit trail. Anyway, we'd love to have you be a guest on the Wednesday podcast. Just go to organize365.com under the podcast tab and apply so that you can be a guest too. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me. Have a great week.
And thank you.
Are you ready to share your transformational story with me and the rest of the Organize 365 community? We would love to hear it. Please go to organize365.com/Wednesday and fill out an application. I cannot wait to see your application in my email inbox.